So there was trust, there was respect, and there's accountability. That's table stakes for any relationship.
You better know other service agency partners who fill the gaps that you have.
Buy this very powerful piece of technology. We're the insurance plan that's going to ensure that they are successful with it.
All right, so welcome back to another episode of How They Did It with myself, Alex Glenn, and Chris Dubois. Chris, love your hat, man.
So yeah, nice hat. I like how we have the different styles going on, but the same general theme.
Yeah, for those of you watching, you see Chris and I have very similar looking hats, the new Partner Hub hats with the leather patch that we're trying out and seeing if we like. I think we like them. They turned out really well. So
yeah.
Check those out. We'll probably try to put the swag. I used to have a swag store on our website, so I'll try to sink some time into that and get some of our swag back up. We had these. I don't partner with people that don't drink coffee mugs and some other ones that were pretty funny and cool. Anyways, today's episode, we got Jill Rowley. She is over at Reveal now, but the episode's about her time spent with the other co-guest of today, David Lewis, who's founder of Demand Gen and led another agency. I can't remember the name of his next agency. Apologize, David, but he and Jill went to market a couple times with Eloqua and Marketo. And this whole episode's about how they navigated the introduction of a service provider at a large platform before they even had partnerships, and how the whole scenario played out and what they did to navigate that and when and how they made sure the bigger deals were closed using the value of just having a service provider involved. Chris, we just got done recording our thoughts on the episode. What'd you think about the whole thing?
No, this is a super valuable episode for, especially for those like agencies, solutions partners who have been on the side of sales conversations where you're going in like wondering, what do I need to be doing right now? Like, why am I in this conversation? And then being able to kind of separate out, am I coming in just for sales rep? Are we going to treat this relationship? Like, are we going to market with something together? Right. What's this relationship actually look like for the partnership? This episode gets into a lot of it. I think it's super valuable.
Yeah. Well, everyone, let's dive in. But first, a word from our sponsors. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors. Reveal has been a sponsor of this podcast since the very beginning. They've been wonderful. Reveal is your nearbound companion. Reveal allows you to not only map accounts, but get direct insight into sales motions, what's going on with your partners, who is dealing with what customers at what time. Nearbound, you may have heard of, you may have been to the conference, you may have met with companies inside of Reveal. It is the idea that you are going to work together to get into accounts, to get bigger deals, to get stickier users, to get stickier clients, and grow faster together. That is the concept of Nearbound. Other terms for it, you may have heard co-selling, ecosystem-led, partner-led. Account mapping is the essence of it. Who do I have that you also have? Who do we not have that the other person has and the other company has? And who knows who at what organizations to help us get closer to those companies? That is the essence of Nearbound. That is what we will use Nearbound to achieve. Top companies like you see here in the directory are all using Reveal to get closer and closer to the deals in play and to get more out of their partnerships. That is Reveal. Go to reveal.co and check it out. There is a free account so you can sign up today. Our next sponsor is partnerhub.app. It is the platform where you can find, align, and manage the partnerships that you are working closely with, those third-party B2B organizations who inside the organization are you doing what with right now?
who would you like to partner with, and what would you like to do with those entities? That is what Partner Hub is all about. The main differentiator between Partner Hub and your typical PRMs is that Partner Hub is built first and foremost as a marketplace and as a tool for solutions providers so that they can take the reins, so that they can control and operate their own partnerships with third-party entities like their tech partners, like other agencies. And when the agencies, when the solutions providers are in the driving seat of the partnership, you'll find that activation, enablement, all of those great keywords, all of those great OKRs that your program needs to succeed will all be lifted. So again, Partner Hub is a great place if you're looking for agencies in Shopify, Salesforce, HubSpot ecosystems. Top agencies like the number one HubSpot agency on the planet, Avidly, are in Partner Hub. Top Shopify agencies like The Stable are in Partner Hub. These are the great users that Partner Hub is thankful and proud to have. And the benefit that these users are getting out of Partner Hub is, again, making sure that they know exactly what partners that they are doing what with right now. There are tools like a syndication process for live offers to recruit more partners, directory products so you can showcase your partners on a subdomain of your choice and draw leads for your partners, actively bring your partners business using a gorgeous mobile-friendly partner directory, and tons of partner management features as well. Everything you need in one place, that is what Partner Hub is all about. Run your program effectively. All right, that is all, and we'll see you guys in the episode.
Thanks for having me on the program, Alex. Excited to be here, excited to be reunited with my partner and still partner, Jill. I've been a serial marketer and an entrepreneur my entire career. I was part of the U.S. sales and marketing division at Microsoft for the launch of Windows and the first Windows product. So that's dating myself a little bit. But I think it was that background where I started. We were talking a little bit before the program started about the word channel. And back then, you could not buy software on the web. You could not buy software directly from a company. You had to go through the channel. You had to go through a partner. And that was back then multiple tiers, all the way from like Ingram Micro to Computerland and such. So I got an early start on how to bring technology to market by doing that. And then along came the web in the 90s. And that became such an important channel. But later on in my career, when I started to become more of an entrepreneur and go to market in 1999, I was actually the inventor of what we're doing right now, voice over the internet. And created a product called Roger Wilco with a bunch of guys, so that I guess I'm the self-proclaimed Alexander Graham Bell. And that was the first time that I said, okay, if I'm going to bring this piece of software to market, who should I partner with? And I went to companies like Activision, Electronic Arts, and Microsoft, and got our software bundled with their games and then eventually integrated. And it was amazing to see how in a year we catapulted that business, and it became religion to me at that point. So fast forward into 2003, I was running marketing at Ellie Mae and bringing a new software application to market, one that had no market share. And I discovered Eloqua, and Eloqua is a marketing automation system. I knew that we would need this platform for our go-to-market. And that's how I met Jill. She was my sales rep and explained the value proposition of Eloqua to me and showed me, you know, really what has become my future in terms of marketing technology. So for 3 years, I spent using and adopting Eloqua, Salesforce, and a bunch of other technology. And then as I really knocked it out of the park for Ellie Mae, I thought, God, there should be, I don't know if it's an agency or a firm, but some new business that should take the power of Eloqua and help people to understand that and use that. So I had a conversation with Jill and I said, hey, listen, I want to start a business that helps people use and adopt Eloqua. What do you think of that? And Jill was all in, and I'm sure we'll talk about what we did together, because I credit Jill with the growth and success of the business and being not just a channel partner, but in many ways, I consider Jill a business partner because she helped me with my strategy and helped with the go-to-market. And I'm excited today to really detail the playbook that Jill and I used. I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to build a business from scratch, which I've done now several times, you know, how do you select a partner and how do you go to market with partners and cover that? And if you are a partner person and you're trying to figure out how do I get my foot in the door at an agency or should I bring an agency partner in to go to market together, we're going to get those questions answered for you. So,
all right. So we just heard David's intro and that kind of sets the tone for what is an awesome episode. And the reason I like this so much is because it's really the first big positive use case of a salesperson at an early stage go to market for a mid-market plus software, marketing automation software in Eloqua, and deciding to take the services that are necessary to get that implemented and work with a partner on them. And it was a credit to David, really his initiative that brought those ideas in and said, hey, I can do this and I want to build a business. And then we'll hear from Jill here in a second on what she decided to do with that. And it's just an amazing story.
So I just say life didn't exist before SaaS, software as a service. I actually joined Salesforce in 2000. So was one of the first 100 employees at Salesforce. And Eloqua was one of my customers at Salesforce because my territory was Canada. And Eloqua was headquartered in Toronto. And so very tiny company, but really compelling software. Compelling software that was looking at marketing as a way to drive sales. I mean, literally back in 2001, Eloqua was really focused on, one, the marketer, but how do you actually elevate the marketer to live in the digital age, to go from a lead to converting to qualified sales pipeline. So incredible that the vision was that so early. I joined Eloqua as employee number 13, and there was no category. This is in 2002. Demand gen wasn't a function. Marketing ops absolutely didn't exist as a term or a function. And we had very powerful software that we were selling to marketers who didn't have the skill set, the expertise, the data to actually be able to leverage the power of the software. Fast forward to 2004, Dave became an Eloqua customer. And I remember like kind of qualifying him out early because they weren't using Salesforce. They were using like an on-prem CRM called Pivotal that I called Pitiful. And we did not integrate. We weren't going to integrate with Pivotal because it wasn't, you know, increasing in market share and it wasn't the future. And so really qualified Dave out until he could go in and make the business case to move from Pivotal to Salesforce. And very successful, as he said. And he came to me, and this was about 2007. And it was still very, very early days in marketing automation. And Dave was like, I think I'm going to start an agency really to serve the Eloqua market. And I'm like, hell yeah, like we need it. Because the software doesn't solve the problem. It is really best practices, expertise, guidance, even like hands on the keyboard for customers. So I think, Dave, it might be interesting to talk about at some point, like where Eloqua was in its services business and why you filled a particular gap that, you know, Eloqua wasn't filling enough in the market. But just quickly fast forward to 10 years at Eloqua, acquired by Oracle, went around the world evangelizing social selling, right? How to transform the way that you sell to instead serve the customer by doing research in social networks, by being to be relevant, to build relationships, really to like listen and learn and engage where your buyers were, to teach where they were learning, and all of that was moving to social networks. And had the opportunity to join Marketo in the C-suite, having never been anything other than an individual quota-carrying sales rep and evangelist for change and transformation. And my role was to bring the customer into our exec meetings, the customer's point of view, the voice of the customer, the voice of the community, the voice of the market, the voice of the ecosystem. And now I'm actually squarely in the partnership a community really working to help elevate the partner professional and the profession, similar to the transformation that we drove in marketing and less or so in sales, but really looking at how do we elevate the partnership profession and professional to the way that we transformed, again, marketing. So excited to be part of like creating a new category. We call it Nearbound. I am working with Reveal, the company, the B2B SaaS company that is creating the category, to help from a strategy lens of how do we grow the B2B SaaS company, and working with some of Reveal's most important strategic customers and partners, which HubSpot is the one today. The most strategic and important customer is HubSpot. We make them successful, we make their partners successful, everybody wins. So I'm sure I left a bunch out.
Yeah. So I like what Jill said there and her story about, you know, she was in that position of what to do and starting this transition of, okay, we're going to help service providers. And Eloqua at the time, I think she alluded to it or mentioned it, was they were selling a service package, an in-house package. So the team was trained up on Eloqua internally. They're selling an implementation package. I don't remember the cost. And now we've got David Lewis coming to the picture saying, I want to do the implementation. And now the argument internally is, why do we push our customers to David versus selling the in-house package? We got revenue on the table. What do you think the argument, Chris, is for enabling the service provider, the marketing agency versus?
Right. So there's a couple different ways to look at it, right? Software was hard. Like, it wasn't a self-implement type of system before. It was something that you needed to bring in a team of some sort in order to help you implement. And with an in-house team, right, you have the pros of having kind of control over the narrative. Like, you get to kind of run them through every step. If there's like upsells, anything else like that, you get to work it, and you know that your team knows the process, and which can be super powerful. But your team is really only trained up on your platform. They don't necessarily know all of the other like use cases and other platforms that your clients might be using. And so when you bring in like the argument for having like a solutions provider, right, to come in and offer these services, now, ideally, they're working on a very specific problem set, like, and they get to see that problem over and over again. So they know that problem better than anyone else for their specific clientele. And so now they're able to know every, like, hey, this is how we can use this with you in relation to your CRM. This is how we can use it in relation to, you know, your website, to whatever other platforms. And so you get this ingenuity and innovation, you know, from bringing in a provider rather than just relying on your in-house team for everything. And so you got to kind of find, what do we want to do? My recommendation would be, I'll go with the solutions provider, find an agency, someone else who can really focus on that. And you focus on doing your software really well and being able to enable those providers to come in and deliver great work.
I love that. And I am obviously an advocate. Partnerships is the big thing. But yeah, the main thing there is your internal team. There's no way they can be as helpful to your customer in the full aspect of what they're trying to achieve. They're not just trying to achieve, have a tool that sends email when a trigger is met. That's not what they're trying to achieve. They're trying to achieve customer acquisition and customer experience and customer success. And there's other things involved there. They need to make sure the website and the CRM and the messaging and the copy and the timing and all of those are right. And the only people that can help them are either an internal marketing division, team, person. That's good. But even better than that is an agency that's helping others because they have the experience. I just helped this other company and we ran into walls, and I can help you even better because I overcome those walls. Anyways, let's get back into it. That was cool. I love the story. So David, just to reiterate, David heard Tony Robbins mention at a conference that there's a big opportunity if you're an expert in a product, software, something that you can create demand for, there is demand for, and there's a market around, and you can become the expert. And I believe there's those three ingredients for David's success that were all part of this sort of perfect storm, this mixture that allowed David to launch into this market and it's David's skills and professional acumen around a product, but that product, the second ingredient, has to be on this growth trajectory. And I think a litmus test, if you're trying to figure out, okay, well, what platforms can I become an expert in? I think there has to be demand, meaning searches, Google searches. The litmus test would be, is there a Google search for blank product software plus services or support or experts, you know? So I call them buying keywords. So you got to have a buying keyword and a lot of searches around that so that there's an opportunity for you to enter that. And then, of course, the third ingredient is someone internally at the software that's going to be your advocate. That's why we have partner teams now. Those partner teams are your advocates as a whole team, partner enablement. But in this time period, and with Elico specifically, there was no partner team. They had an in-house service team. Then they had the saleswoman, Jill Rally, who said, guys, I've been working with this guy, David. I'm bringing him into deals. He's closing like crazy. He's got a unique demo capability that we don't have internally. He's becoming more of an expert in our product than our internal services team. Why aren't we doing more of this, right? And that's the next phase of this conversation. But what do you find interesting, awesome, Chris?
I mean, all of that. I love the idea of creating your own demo environment, right? To actually show it live, and the fact that being like a partner, being outside the organization, you have so much more flexibility to be able to do this. And you get to now create those case studies we were talking about earlier, right? The use cases that you see that the internal team might not see as often. You get to actually build it out and explain and like walk through those in an environment you've completely built out to demonstrate those. That's a great opportunity for any solutions partners.
Yeah, an opportunity to start looking for them. So we're going to look for them, and we're going to start build that next phase of the story.
As I was saying, yeah, Jill was the first person to introduce the platform to me. And it's a funny story in that Jill was having her first child right at the time coming up to when I was signing the agreement. So Jill and I didn't actually get to execute that contract together. And I think that's an interesting part in our element of our history together, because that's the only thing we didn't accomplish together. We accomplished so much. I said earlier, I was a serial marketer and a serial entrepreneur, having done now a couple different startups. I think it's important for the entrepreneurs listening, you know, why did I start this business? And I got to tell you, as someone who's now my age and has been an entrepreneur, I could start a business every single day. Like, I understand the recipe for it. And it was really quite simple. It's also the same recipe that if you were going to build a YouTube channel in 2024, what you might create from a content perspective. I was at a conference, the mortgage industry conference, and Tony Robbins was the keynote speaker. And he said something, it's a longer story, but I'll just give the important point, which is he said, for any of you who want to be an entrepreneur, write down on a piece of paper, if there is a service or product that you know, or something you know really, really well how to do, and if somebody would pay you, likely, or value that knowledge or expertise that you had. And I wrote how to use marketing automation, which at that time, it was Eloqua, because there was no Marketo, there was no HubSpot, there were no, Eloqua was the first, as Jill said, you know, SaaS-based marketing automation system being purchased by enterprise and mid-market customers. So I wrote that down on the piece of paper. And mind you, I'm CMO, head of marketing at Ellie Mae, but I'm writing down this entrepreneurial instinct that if I wanted to start a business, that's what it will be. Went home, thought about it. And the short story is in June 7th of 2007, I left Ellie Mae to start the very first Eloqua agency. And as Jill mentioned earlier, at that time, Eloqua was doing all their own professional services. And I was a little bit of a unicorn. I mean, I am a self-complained tech geek. I have a lot of technology around me all the time. The Iron Man theme is Tony Stark is you know, a little bit of a animated idol for me and Iron Man. So I love tech. And I couldn't find, you know, when I signed the contract with Eloqua, I didn't know that they would have a professional services team reach out to me to implement the technology. So I just went online and started reading their implementation guide, And this is like December 26th. And by January 4th, we launched our first email campaign. And so when they reached out to me after the beginning of the year and said, it's time to talk about your implementation, I said, oh, it went great. We launched our first email the other day. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, we set everything up. We tested the IP addresses. We just had this campaign to get going. And they said, no one's ever done that. And I said, really? I go, what do people do? And they said, oh, we have a whole implementation service. So I got to know Eloqua, the CEO and the team, very, very well as one of their kind of poster child clients who was having tremendous success with it. But that is when I realized, Alex, that there is no outside agency to help people with it. And when I went to implement Salesforce, because I brought it in very guerrilla, I met a company back then. It was called Echo Lane, and they were a Salesforce implementation partner. They charged us like $15,000 to implement it. So I saw like, oh, you could have a services company and charge someone to implement a SaaS technology. And there's, I don't even know how many SaaS applications today, which is why I said, if I wanted to start a business tomorrow, I would just find a thriving, growing platform where the vendor's professional services is probably not what ultimately a client needs, and start an agency. And we've seen that for HubSpot, Marketo, and many other SaaS applications, Workday, you name it. So the recipe in terms of being an entrepreneur to start a services-based business, I know that. But what was unique was my go-to-market partner, which was Jill. And, you know, I really want to dive into what we did, because again, when I quit my job, turned in the resignation letter, and the CEO asked me, he said, so what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go actually start an agency that implements Eloqua. And he goes, oh, that makes such great sense, because you've had such great success with it here. And he goes, where are you going to get your customers? And he asked me that question. And I'm like, yeah, I know where. He doesn't know Jill, but I know where. And then I go, yeah, I've got, you know, a strategy for doing that. He goes, man, you're the worst salesperson I've ever heard, because shouldn't we be a customer? And I'm like, yeah. And they're actually still a customer to this day, which is wild, even though I've sold the business and it's been acquired. So I picked up the phone and called Jill, and I said, Jill, it's time for us to hit the road together. And fortunately, back at that time, Jill wasn't on the East Coast. She was on the West Coast. She lived a few miles from me, but we would get together almost like cops that would meet at a coffee shop and get in the car together and go there. She didn't have a sales engineer, which maybe you can talk about. So part of the playbook is I added value to Jill's sales cycle, being so proficient with Eloqua as a sales rep. When she wanted to demo the platform to people, I could come in and represent two things. One, a successful CMO that's used and implement the platform and can talk ad nauseum on the power of it and how to launch it and bring your team on board with it and do great things beyond batch and blast email marketing, scoring, nurturing, lead management, all those things. And then I could also actually demo the product. And we built this really crazy, I built this little website called iTimer, which was a fictional time travel software company. And I would demo Eloqua and using that. And we would just try, you know, different plays in terms of the demo format, what Jill would talk about the platform, what I would show, if a prospect asked a question, who would answer it. So we were literally a team that brought our expertise in different ways, but we really fine-tuned how we approached all of these sales calls. And one of the things I loved about Jill, and I think is important, is Jill and I were aligned on what the ideal customer profile was. Her customer that she wanted to sell to would also be a good fit for my agency. And I think that's super important. Otherwise, we're not aligned on a win-win. The second thing was what our roles were in that meeting, what Jill would talk to and position and what I would do. And Jill, you remember there was a couple meetings where I would show up and people would be like, by the way, who's this guy? And they didn't actually know that she brought a services partner to the meeting, and we wouldn't disclose that necessarily ahead of time. And we would go through that. But she was my go-to-market partner. All our initial customers either came from people that were in my network of CMOs. Jill and I had done a user group together. So there was a lot of people in the user group that became customers. And then as Jill was out prospecting and working, she would just bring me and do these ride-alongs, and we would take down, you know, some of the biggest, baddest clients out there, including Salesforce, which was a deal that we won together. And I think one of our greatest accomplishments.
First comment, I like Jill. That was a great closing tour to her end piece. And then like quick story on that, I'm working with an agency and their sales rep has stopped taking on deals that aren't like the perfect fit for the solution that they're trying to offer, right? They could do certain things, offer certain services, but it's not ideal. Instead, they started building up a network of all of the different partners who do offer those services that they can, like, within their ecosystem, right? So it's, they're working in HubSpot. So it's only other HubSpot solutions partners that are offering specific help for all of these apps.
Yeah.
They send the lead out because, like, we can't help you right now because you have to do X, Y, and Z first, right? They send them to a partner. The partner facilitates whatever that first step is, and then it's sending them back now. And so it's a much larger deal that this turns into, and you got to help this partner who's also referring leads in. So, like, yeah, sales reps need to kind of understand this ecosystem, because when you look at HubSpot, right, she said six hubs, thousands of different, like, applications that are now connected in here. An in-house team cannot handle all of that and understand everything. If you contact HubSpot support right now and ask for help on one of those applications, they're going to refer you to that third party, to that application. Right? Because even their support team can't keep up with just questions about this, even if they had the documentation. And so it's really important when you're, like, if someone is looking for some of these solutions, they need to find some other service provider to come in and help. And so one, as the provider, you get really specific on, hey, this is what we do, right? Like, we work on this platform, but we know how to integrate with X, Y, and Z to get you the results you're looking for, because you're not just looking for, right, that email marketing, or like within HubSpot or whatever the platform you're using is. You're looking for that, but then you really want to be doing all of these other things within your acquisition, like, pipeline afterwards. We know how to do those things because we've seen those use cases. And so you're able to now provide a level of support that an in-house team can't do because there's too much going on within that ecosystem, you know, for them to keep up.
To your point, an anecdote that I just remembered, I didn't even think about this when Jill was talking, but I was at a software company, I was consulting. Wasn't on the in-house team, but they were going through a organizational change. They were looking for a full marketing automation plus CRM suite. Someone internally was advocating HubSpot. This was very early days in HubSpot before their CRM product was built out. Honestly, I didn't like the tool. It was very, not very, very early, but maybe 4 years into their product. And there was this other product called, I think, user.com is what it was called at the time. I think it's still around, but they had a, in my opinion, much more built out, robust product, had more feature capabilities, and user seats were less expensive. So as a consultant, I was like, this is it. And I've done an implementation of User and I can help you with it. But my experience with user.com was limited. I had one implementation. It wasn't fully baked. And what I failed to do, and this is what happened, is I didn't have a solutions partner to help them with the user.com, and no one internally knew it. What a salesperson at HubSpot did at that moment during their sales cycle, because I think the person internally filled out a form, a typical demo request, something like that. Immediately, the savvy salesperson at HubSpot brought a solutions partner onto the call, first demo. The CEO was listening in. They laid it out on a platter. This is going to take 3 months. This is the end result. This is going to be your solutions partner. Their fees are baked in, or somehow, you know, it was really just an easy cost structure for it. Even though it was way more expensive, the CEO is like, no brainer. We're going with HubSpot. Bought it. Didn't have to think about it again. And from the CEO standpoint, or the revenue leader standpoint, it's not just about the cost of the product. It took me a while in my early career to learn this. It's not just about the cost of the product. It's about time and resources and potential issues down the road that could cost more time and resources. And this is why Salesforce has been able to charge $30,000 for implementations with a solutions partner, because it's not just about the $30,000. It's about long-term. Are we going to IPO? We need Salesforce. This $30,000 is a drop in the bucket when it comes to what we're going to be able to do. And that's why these big platforms are able to do it, because sales plus solutions partner, fully baked, roll it out.
So, I mean, it really, the reason why Dave was compelling to me was for my customers, right? Like, full stop, that's it. If he couldn't bring value to my customers, then I wouldn't bring Dave into deals, period. So it was really like understanding the needs of the customer and the market, and knowing the capabilities that Dave could bring not only capabilities, but credibility. And so I would include Dave as early as possible in the pre-sale. One of the things as a rep that I did that I don't think enough salespeople do, I focused less on the product, the features, functions, and more on the journey, right? The customer journey of what life would look like after they signed the contract. Because we all know software doesn't actually do anything if you don't actually have the right skill and expertise to like design it to do something. And so, I'm a huge, huge advocate of services for any software that you're deploying. And in particular, now when the software that you're deploying has to integrate with other pieces of software, and not just like if we want to use HubSpot as the example. The software, like if you're deploying HubSpot, yes, they have six hubs. Few companies today are actually deploying all six hubs of HubSpot, but they also have 1500 app partners. And so what is the entirety of what the customer would need? And so I would think about that through the lens of also like, at HubSpot, if you want to be interesting to HubSpot, what problem are you solving that they don't have partners that are solving today? Right. So if they're moving and they're trying to sell more of their ops hub, then are you their best go-to, you know, ops partner? And how do you know how that fits into the context of their entire platform? But in terms of like Dave, and it evolved over time. Right? Our relationship evolved over time because Eloqua wasn't a standalone product. It became the Power Platform. And so what Dave and his business did too is, Dave, you built partnerships with other software companies that Eloqua customers would use. And then also, like, Dave wasn't the only partner as Eloqua grew. And we had partners that specialized in different areas. And so for me as a rep, 10 years at the company, right, the things that I would do, I would look at like our NPS surveys, and I would read the ones, I'd read all of them, but I'd read with a lens on which partners have helped these customers be successful. And if we have customers who are struggling, which partners could help them be successful, right? And so you start to do like this matching of, we have potential customers who have like Microsoft CRM. Ugh, it gives me like back then. Sorry, I have no idea what it looks like today. But we had partners who, or a partner who had developed expertise in that area. So if Dave wasn't the guy who was integrating with Microsoft CRM, I wasn't going to bring Dave in on the deal. I had to bring the right partner for this particular customer need. And you start to really like know thy customer, know thy partners, right? Be the matchmaker of, you know, which customers, which potential customers need which partners. And oftentimes nowadays it's more than one partner because of the complexity of solutions that companies are buying. So I just want to make sure that we hit on like the journey. The beginning, I think Dave did a really good job describing, like, my customers needed Dave's services. And my company, Eloqua, wasn't the only place I would go to, you know, procure services for my customers. Dave was like in California. When I was covering California, I think it's important that local presence exists. I wanted Dave to be able to come in the room pre-sale. I wanted him to come in the room post-sale and so forth. So, Dave and I were partners. We would share intel on the accounts. Dave then developed a book of business. And so then he could tell more customer stories. And it is that I think we spend not enough time. We have customers, right? People hopefully got paying customers. Really understand that customer story, right? Like, why are they happy with you? Why would they hire you again? Why would they refer you to other people? And as a rep, I can only know so many customer stories. My partners who work with hands-on Have done the deployment, work with them ongoing. Like, they know more customer stories because they work closely with more customers. And so I literally don't understand why there are salespeople out there who don't get this. If you're a salesperson and you're not taking time to understand the partner ecosystem and even potentially identifying new partners for your company and bringing them into the mix, then you suck as a salesperson. I cannot say it more strongly.
All right. So this is still the argument of why bring sales and partnerships together in these deal cycles. The argument is for the why in general, we're still on that, is this partner can not only help you close the deal by providing that security, that trust blanket, right? We're going to help. We're going to support. We're going to be here for you. Your internal team can do that. But we mentioned the argument of the service provider knows the full stack. They know the competitor. So let's talk about that. Why bring them in earlier? Well, David mentioned he can help not only Jill, but also the buyer understand if they're a fit for that product earlier in the sales cycle, which is super important to save these salespeople time. Some of these enterprise software have a 6-month sales cycle. So if you are barking up the wrong tree, it could mean hours and hours of your time as a salesperson without a commission check at the end of that. If she had brought David in earlier, like I think David mentioned a couple examples, or just service provider in general, if you're listening, bring service providers earlier to the sales cycle so that they can point and say, this is actually not the best solution for this user. Potential user, they need this combination now and maybe you later. Or what's better is this is the perfect setup for this user because A, B, and C. He mentioned something about the data warehouse customization example between Salesforce and Eloqua and why Marketo wouldn't have been a fit. But that customer could have gone through tons of demos and maybe even got in touch with a really good salesperson at Marketo and got sold a bag of goods from Marketo. But because David was involved in that conversation early, he was quickly able to point out, this is where you're going to run into issues with Marketo. You can't do that. You're going to need that. Your option that you need is Eloqua. And if Jill hadn't brought David in, they wouldn't have heard that. And who knows where it would have been. And some of these commissions are huge, 6-figure commission. Yeah. Right.
Kind of going back to the trust piece here. When you have, there are certain things that a like solutions provider can say that the company itself cannot, right? If I go into a call and say, hey, Marketo sucks, don't go there. Like nobody's going to believe me because I'm selling against them. Obviously I'm going to say that, but if a solutions partner comes in and says, hey, this isn't the best fit for you, here's why. And I have proof because I've worked with so many clients and I've seen this so many times, like, you're on a different level of trust because you're not coming at it from the same like vantage point as the company itself. And so great opportunity introducing partners into these environments or into the sales conversations to be able to lead with that.
Yeah. And I think to your point, it's like, okay, now you argue, well, do we need sales engineers for our product that are really savvy at implementation? I think, yes, of course, some of these larger platforms, but to your point, the same thing is like, even if a sales engineer said something about the other product, I think I would believe it more. I would have more trust in the sales engineer because they're less incentivized to create a bad tech stack than the salesperson. A salesperson just wants a commission check and the retention. Maybe they're incentivized a little bit with retention, but their big, you know, pot of gold is just that sale. Whereas the sales engineer, has less incentive there and can really help guide the customer. But yeah, if you brought in solutions partner and said, hey, Alex, I brought on, you know, David, sure, to the call. And David, he's been doing implementations of both Eloqua and Marketo. He's a partner, certified partner of Marketo, our competitor. He's also a certified partner of Eloqua. And he has some interesting things that he told me I'd like him to tell you here today. And then David comes in with, great to meet you. Right. Here's what we do. And this is what I saw. I saw your business, where you're headed. Salesforce is your core CRM. You want marketing automation. You want this data infrastructure. Marketo is going to be amiss for you. All right, let's get back.
Maybe we break it into two chapters, if you will. We'll focus on the go-to-market stuff, like what actually Jill and I did together from a marketing perspective. But then let's take a step back and talk about the actual playbook and the relationship that Jill had, because I don't want to gloss over what I think is how challenging finding such a great partnership that we had. Jill mentioned earlier, for example, that after Eloqua, we started partnering with lots of other MarTech companies. And now at this point, I've got hundreds of clients over the years, and more MarTech companies want to partner with us because they saw demand gen as a channel to get to those customers. And I got to tell you, most of their approaches fell flat, and I didn't want to partner with their sales team to go to market together because it wasn't win-win. So in terms of what really worked for Jill and I, and for anyone listening to like how you select a partner, let's first start off with the individual. I mean, the company, you got to pick the right tech partners. I think that's out of scope for today. But in terms of as an individual, what made Jill so unique and what made our partnership unique? So Jill was the number one seller at Eloqua. I didn't have to think very hard in terms of who to hitch my car to. Now, that said, some people may find that they're not going to get attention from that person because they're new on the block. I was very fortunate that Jill needed me at the time and I needed Jill. But there was trust and there was respect and there was accountability. Very soon, I was no longer the only agency. And the only thing that I ever asked Jill, and we explicitly talked about this, is if you feel you need to bring in another partner, or I'm not the right fit, or you get a reaction from the prospect that they don't want to work, let me know that. Don't be, you know, opaque about that, because that erodes trust. So we were really good about when we would go out and identify these prospects, whether those was the right fit for myself and for her. Because there were times Jill was maybe pitching the product platform and I'd be like, I don't think you're going to win this one because they're just not sophisticated enough. Now, Jill knew and how to qualify, as she said early, very well. But there were times when, you know, we were just not going after the right fit. So there was trust, there was respect, and there's accountability. That's table stakes for any relationship, but it has to be there. And the next thing was, you have to know each other's value proposition. There were literally times that the prospect who she was pitching would say, so I'm a little confused. You guys offer professional services, meaning Eloqua, but he's here and you're saying he can do the implementation as well. Why should we choose one or the other? We knew that question would come about and there was always the right answer for that. Now, there were times when I had to say to Jill, I think I need to step away from this one. You guys handle it. And again, we were transparent about that. There were times when, I mean, Jill knew our pricing model. We had worked on it together. So she could confidently say, guys, for $18,000, this is a steal. The time to value is going to be so rapid through demand gen. It's not that our professional services team can't help you, but these guys know how to do marketing with the platform because that's what they help all their other clients do. So they're going to get you implemented very quickly because they're then able to work hands-on keyboard with you to do some of the more sophisticated things that our services team won't. So she had a pat answer for that. We were able to do objection handling together. If someone says, as new products came about, Jill would leave the room, maybe go grab a cup of coffee, hit the restroom or something. So are you familiar with Marketo? They'd whisper to me. I'm like, yeah. And they said, so, you know, we're looking at both platforms, which was great intel. So on the ride home, I would share with Jill, they are looking at Marketo. They're looking at the platform, and a partner can bring in other dimensions to the sales cycle that the rep doesn't have and vice versa. And I could say to them, we have clients who have actually both Eloqua and Marketo. Jill and I could talk about when we grabbed another platform. But the point I want to make there is that it's really helpful sometimes when a partner has, you know, a two-footed soccer player, has multiple platforms they're familiar with. And I could confidently say to them, I know you're looking at that. I can save you some time. Being that you're an enterprise class customer, Salesforce was a great example. I was able to show their head of marketing operations how long it would take to create a data filter at the time on Marketo versus Eloqua. And I think that was the end of that deal cycle for Marketo. So the partner could really showcase that. So transparency, alignment, accountability, objection handling, you know, we learned how to joint sell together. And that's, you know, our win rate was over 80% together. And when it wasn't, it was because it either wasn't a fit demand gen, maybe it was in the sports industry and a different partner was more relevant, or maybe it wasn't the right customer for Eloqua. And you know, Jill, I'm always proud of what we accomplished together. And we didn't really talk these things through, Alex, but I think just who Jill is and maybe who I am, we just showed up win-win every single day and figured out how to get really, really good together. And so my message would be is like, go either find, if you're fortunate enough, the top sales rep at your partners, or at least find the ones that are very good at what they do. By the way, sometimes the best sales reps actually want to work with internal resources, and you just have to talk to them and find out if that's their playbook. Don't waste your time because they're not going to work with a partner.
Yeah, so I just want to briefly touch on something that I think everyone listening to this podcast probably understands at some level, but the idea of not just selling with your partners, but going to market with them, right? If you're actually going to market, creating content, right? Taking the actions that are actually going to bring your services and the platform out in front of people. If you're doing that together and you're attaching yourself to each other, you're only going to be more successful. Like, you're increasing the odds of it actually taking hold and being a successful campaign.
The go-to-market is, for those of you that, you know, may not fully understand what go-to-market means, and everybody has a different sort of interpretation, it's really just bringing a new product to a new buyer persona. It could be a new integration that you have and you're taking that to market, but it's really just something new to people that haven't seen it, right? And in that world, it's like, okay, well, Jill could rely on Oracle's marketing department, and then leads come in, but they're those same sort of mismatched, you know, we call them marketing qualified, right? They're typically, you know, hit and miss, right? But if you go to market with a partner, as Jill and David creating content together, then your leads are, you know, I saw this implementation that David and Demand Gen did, and I want that. And Jill and David did a webinar and a lunch and learn and an event, and they talked about this use case, and they brought in 50, not marketing partner, they're partner qualified, they're partner go-to-market qualified, meaning they're ready to go. Right? That's what they found. And then I'll just touch on something Jill said earlier around, or maybe it was David that said that earlier, around how important it is to know that you're sort of on a sinking ship and to listen to your clientele. So if you're the agency partner, and the perfect example is not really perfect, but an example that Chris knows well is there's Salesforce implementations that are starting to realize they weren't a fit for Salesforce and they're ready to kind of move off on HubSpot, or maybe vice versa. I'm sure that happens a lot too. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a tech, I'm speaking to the tech CEOs now, and you're trying to think about strategy with entering markets and partnerships, I think a good actionable strategy would be look at the legacy software that your tech is going to directly compete against, or not even legacy, just the people that have been in the market the longest. Find out if they have a partner program, and then look at and enable and talk to your salespeople and create a routine, even like fields in your CRM for, okay, when this company is coming off that software, who implemented that software for them? As a salesperson, I need you to ask that on the demo. As a CS person, I need you to find that out in the transition. Then we want a routine where partnerships, if you have that going as a partner team, or even marketing or sales, just get in touch with that entity, that person that was their implementation. Find out if they're interested in helping with the transition, even enable them with the, hey, we'll reintroduce you as, hey, they did it for you back when, but they're going to become an expert in our solution and help you with the migration. And we're maybe even going to pay part of it because we want them to learn how to do it so that they can then take it to their other 50 customers and offer the same migration. And now you have implementation expert partners that know not just your implementation, but know how to migrate from their previous tech stack that they were partners with to you. And you've got some great partners. That's that. Let's get back in.
They got closer to doing their IPO, and I was very close with Joe Payne, the CEO, who I still talk to this day, they developed a thing called the Smart Start. They had a branded implementation package, which Joe was incented to sell and bring in the service department. And, you know, for anyone who knows Jill Rowley, Jill's going to do what's best for you know, the partner that she represents, the company she represents, but she's also going to break the rules if the rules should be broken. And so, Jill, I'm just teeing that up for you because I remember telling Jill, these smart starts that you want us to implement for $6,500, that's a hard no. I'm not going to take bad business. If you want to implement those smart starts, that's with your own pro services. He goes, well, you know, that's going to cost you business because Jill and Gary and Benny and Susan, they're all incented and need to sell these smart starts because we need to generate every dollar of revenue we can to go public. And I got to tell you, anybody who builds a services business on implementations, do not do that. That should be a portion of your revenue, but the majority of your revenue should come through the journey that the clients go on with the use and adoption of the technology, or you face that risk that you're in direct competition with your partner. But Jill, I don't know how you want to discuss how you towed the corporate line, but you also knew that you would not get in trouble for closing large deals, even if a partner was involved and you didn't sell that smart start.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was trust earned over time, you know, at Eloqua. And you're right. I broke a lot of rules, but always in service of the customer, and having just been so close to the customer for so long. I think like one of the things that we did require at Eloqua at the time is that at least one all access seat of training was sold with every deal. And that was our training and in the Eloqua Academy. And I totally had no problem with that. Even if we had a service partner like Demand Gen do the deployment, it was important that we sold at least one seat of all access training to the customer. Totally believed in that. It comes down to, you know, really with the sales leader, the services leader, comp plan drives behavior. And at the end of the day, like I was rewarded for customer success. And I just had to know who was going to make my customer the most successful, the fastest time to value, and who was going to help my customers win more of the industry awards, who was going to help my customers get promoted within their organizations, who was going to help my customers land new opportunities at new companies. You know, that was what was my guiding principle for you know, how I worked. I know we're running up on time, but I do think it's interesting. Like Dave became a more important partner as he did partner with other tech companies in the Marketo ecosystem because, and this is so important today. I cannot stress how important this is for agencies today. People are buying multiple pieces of technology. That tech has to work better together. That tech has to be integrated from a data, from a process, workflow, automation, and insights perspective. And so if you are a partner, if you are a tech partner, you better have a lot more than just one piece of software in your warehouse. Maybe you are too small that you have all of that, but then you better partner. Partnering, that is the way the future's going. And so even as a services and agency partner, you better know other service agency partners who fill the gaps that you have, right? Who have the things around the edges that you don't deliver. And so I cannot stress enough, partners partnering with each other is so important today.
We took down BEA together, if you remember, Jill, and we didn't do creative. I was unapologetic that Demand Gen never did creative for clients. We were strictly a technology services strategy and implementation partner. But I would partner, to Jill's point, with Bumblebee Marketing to take down, actually it was Cisco, who I think BEA bought them. I don't know. But anyway, when I had a gap, I had a go-to partner for creative, or I had a go-to partner for data services, or I had a go-to partner for whatever was that gap. And Jill and I transparently talked about these gaps so that we could continue to win. And really reinforce Jill's point. Now, I'm not saying go start an agency or have an agency that tries to be all things to all people. You've got to have your expertise and niche, which you're really, really known for. For us, it was marketing automation in the beginning, but it became MarTech and then it became marketing operations. And I always made sure from a thought leadership perspective that I was looking out and knowing kind of where the puck was going to go, say, okay, we need to expand our services into this area because the customer is going to be looking for how to do predictive or how to do ABM or how to do sending technology, gifting and that type of stuff. So what are the leading technologies? Don't partner with everybody, but partner with the top brands. And if you do, make sure that you establish some rules of engagement with those partners of how you go to market. Because like I said, most of them wanted to partner with us at a certain point, Alex, because they wanted to sell their tech to our customers, as opposed to I'm looking for tech companies to help them help their prospects with the implementation and ongoing services. So you just got to make sure you understand what you're looking for. And, you know, the really small companies who have no channel and not a lot of good marketing going on, they try to lean really heavy on the partners and think that the partners are going to just bring them into all these accounts. And that's not always the case, that we're just going to, you know, find the next shiny new object and bring it into our customer base, because we're going to be held accountable for the success of it.
Okay. So that was a long one, but what I want to focus on is that Smart Start Marketo implementation for $6,500 that they were kind of pushing the salespeople to sell. They were allowing the agency partners to do the implementation. David's argument was, okay, well, now we become a chop shop. We're just basically a cog in the wheel, so to speak. And we're not really providing the strategic guidance. You're just doing something because it's productized and sold. There's arguments on the tech side, pros and cons. There's arguments on the agency side, whether to do that, pros and cons, or service that. You've had experience with that from the HubSpot side, but what do you think? Pros and cons, what would you do in that world?
So the pros, I guess, for a situation like this, right? Especially if you're a smaller agency, it means you got revenue coming in the door. So like if you're getting like this Smart Start, right, $6,500, HubSpot, just charging, you know, $3,000, if you're getting that, awesome. Like it's revenue. It's going to keep your lights on if you need it, or it's going to at least give you some revenue coming in so you can grow in the areas that you actually want to be growing in. And at the same time, you get to help the partner and build that relationship with the partner as someone that they can rely on to, you know, to send work to and actually make them look good. On the con side, though, so you've way less control over these types of engagements because they're being sent to you with expectations already set by the partner. And so if you're not clear, like with the partner and making sure that you're in line with those expectations and that you can deliver on all of those, like it can lead to some issues down the road. I think my biggest fear with something like this is that if you're just taking these deals and executing, you're replaceable, right? You're providing a tactical service, which is fine. Like it's great to be able to do that, but it means anyone can come in and just do those same tactics, right? You're not leaning into the strategy and the expertise that you have as an agency by seeing all of these problems so many times. And so when someone comes in and says, hey, you're just helping me with onboarding or implementing this piece of software, and for HubSpot, for instance, right? HubSpot charges 3,000, and this might've changed, and, you know, at the time of this recording, they charge 3,000 for onboarding, or you can go work with a solutions provider and it's going to be waived. And now that waiving it doesn't necessarily mean it's cheaper. It could mean that the solutions provider is going to charge you more, but they're going to provide more services. Or what you normally see happen is that people try going as cheap as they can and say, okay, it's $1,500 to work with me. So now the sales rep uses that as part of their pitch. Hey, for onboarding, we actually recommend you go here. You can save $1,500, you know, from what we would charge you by working with this partner. But now it's becoming a commodity, right? We're commoditizing this service, and it's just whoever can go cheaper is, because you're providing the same tactics, it's going to go lower. So I can see that becoming an issue. But if you're a partner, like one of the agencies working with a tech company, figure out how do I really niche in and provide a very specific solution to a very specific problem. So now it's actually worth more money for everybody. And I get to make that company look way better. They're going to become stickier for that platform that I'm helping them get embedded with. And I think everybody just wins more in the long run if you're playing that way.
All good points. So the argument there is, well, actually, let's start with a HubSpot example. Klaviyo just did this with their enterprise deals. They rolled out a managed service internal package just for their enterprise. They're not cannibalizing, is a key word here, when you're a tech company. And if you're listening, trying to figure out whether you do this or not, offer a service package. The way I have seen it work that I think is something worth considering is if you rolled up your customer success hours, added up, did the napkin math and you think about it and you're like, okay, with this certain type of implementation that we like to do and make sure the customer does because it leads to higher retention and a better lifetime customer value, higher lifetime customer value. Well, the package itself, or not even the package, you don't have a package yet, but the customer success hours, maybe there's 10 of those, average, you know, $100 an hour, whatever it is. Okay, well, there's $1,000 there. Well, we like to add this on, salesperson takes that time to do this. And typically they have a service provider, or someone in-house do this aspect. We're going to do that for them too. That's another 10 hours. Okay, well, there's $2,000 there. We can either hire more customer success people and sales engineers and whoever needs to do that, or we can take that to market with our solution providers and have the honest conversation, or not even our, but experts, agencies, and say, listen, we're going to start requiring this type of user buy this. We can do maybe two of them a week, but we're going to have 10 a week. So we're going to have 8 to dish out. Or we have to hire. Can you maybe handle 2 of them and work with our team and become an expert if you're not already? And then you get their nod and yes or no. Maybe they're of the opinion, no, that commoditizes our services, blah, blah, blah. There's some will say, no, that's a lead for us. You're going to pay for my team's time. And I feel confident I'm going to be able to sell them into a custom support package afterwards. Yeah, I'll take that. And you find those. So I think that is the argument for it. The argument against it is, okay, well, just having the service package on your website will deter top agencies from wanting to go down the partnership road. So if you have a funnel for partner acquisition, if you see a managed service price tag on the pricing page, or even some, I've seen it in the header of certain companies' websites, that is not good for your partner acquisition. And then it's the idea of cannibalizing services where, you know, well, Chris and his team are already doing that in to an extent, and now you're going to offer it. Now you're competing directly with the service providers that have taken the time, the energy to learn your service, learn your platform, sorry, and go to market with you in the past. And now you're just coming out with this and going to, you know, cannibalize our services. That's not cool. And now you're competitive. And then it gets Chris looking in another direction. So certain types of platforms in a certain way, yes, it makes sense. But be very careful with it if you do decide to do it.
Also, it isn't even just aligning with like salespeople, it's CS, right? So customer success and account management, who really is responsible for, let's say, upselling the account. So, you know, there's a lot of companies that have customers that aren't getting the value. And, you know, you can't just, you know, think about like new logo all the time. And so, you know, think about companies who have customers who might not even know that the like HubSpot, as the example again, that HubSpot has 6 hubs, right? And that they could actually really value getting value from additional hubs. And so how does that agency help that customer? And that a lot of times will come from the CSM. And so let's not just like think about like new, although companies like HubSpot want agencies who source deals, but how you can add, you know, incremental value and sell more hubs to more of their customers. One of the things I think Dave and I did well is understand how the market was shifting, right? And when Marketo came into the mix, it wasn't until they signed their first services partner that I was like, wow, they have an easier product to use, it's cheaper and it's faster to implement. You know, what non-tech savvy marketer wouldn't want that? But what they didn't have is the truth serum to marketers in terms of how hard the actual new way to market, which is, you know, not generate a bunch of leads at the top, and not, you know, batch and blast, What they hadn't been, you know, telling the market was that that transformation required services, agency, et cetera. And so when they signed LeadMD as their first services partner, I'm like, oh, okay, now they're like hopefully gonna like it help their customers actually be successful, which then was like, oh, okay, well, now it's a different kind of competitor for Eloqua. So the market shifts. And then Dave, like he said, was able to help me in the right accounts, compare the two products. And then ultimately, hey, Dave, the Marketo story, if you're drowning in a pit of or shit, it's time to Eloquit. When I was at Marketo, I went to Dave and I went with the campaign idea of, you know, Eloqua isn't the Eloqua that you and I, you know, helped build. And at that point, Oracle had owned Eloqua for 14, 15, 16, 17, for 4 years. And a lot of Eloqua customers were drowning in a pit of or shit, and it was time to Eloquit. And who better to help them than Dave, who was an Eloqua partner, was a Marketo partner, and had the success story of migrating Eloqua customers to Marketo. Dave was the perfect partner for me to come back to in 2018 and say, let's do this together. Long-term relationship.
I want to make sure we tell these the short part. When I talk about accountability and respect and trust, there was a day, it was at the Alamo Starbucks in California. I was eating a spinach feta wrap and a grande iced shaken espresso. And I can remember it because it was like a scene of a movie where I told Jill that it was time for our business to expand beyond Eloqua and partner with Marketo. And Jill started crying, almost like I told her I was having an affair on with another partner. And it was really difficult for Jill to hear because, first of all, this is someone who at the time, you know, bled red. She had built Eloqua's business, number one sales rep, Eloqueen, and now her most trusted partner. And really someone as a friend is saying, I'm going to the dark side. And I said, I have to do it for the business. Eloqua's not growing fast enough anymore that if I want to build a business. And I said, there's also customers that are, you know, marketers move. So they're moving to other companies and they're saying, Dave, can we take you with us? If I was, no, we can't do Marketo. We can only help you if you go to a company and run marketing and use Eloqua. I just wasn't going to limit the growth of the business. And thank God we did that because we now know what has happened to Eloqua. I didn't have that foresight to know that the market was going to shrink like it has after Oracle, but I had to expand the business. Later on, Jill became an evangelist and promoter of Marketo. And you know, there's just a lot to the story, but the point I want to make is be, you know, have the integrity, have the trust, have the respect. I did tell Jill, and I felt that it will be actually advantageous to you for me to have the expertise on both platforms. We'll win more deals together, win right deals together, provided that we stay in the right market for Eloqua. And we did. And I don't know if we ever lost a deal. If we did, they were few and far between, but it wasn't a surprise. And I would say to an entrepreneur or agency partner, you know, expand into more than one technology if that's the right thing to do for your customer. And that's what Jill always understood and appreciated is David is doing this because this is what the customer needs. There are people going to need a different technology for certain scenarios. And he wants to continue to grow and in his business. We won Eloqua Partner of the Year. We won back-to-back Marketo Partner of the Year. So, you know, it is important. And the thing that I wanted to make sure that we get to is, you know, Jill and I didn't just do joint sales calls together. We went to market together. We created content together. We put on events together. We hosted dinners together. We hosted breakfasts, every industry conference. Jill and I were always doing something with prospects and customers and bringing them together. The awards that we helped our clients win, at one point, about 65% of our clients were winning the prestigious Eloqua Markey Award and the Serious Decisions Award. And so by helping our clients win so many awards, Jill was able to point to, these are some of the customers that are having the best success with Eloqua. Well, why? They're working with Demand Gen, with Dave's firm. So we did workshops, we did user group meetings, and we were true partners in a sense that we put together a go-to-market plan and executed against that, even our marketing teams working to support Jill and I.
So Chris, if I was a salesperson at this tech company that you're a partner of, and I know you're a good fit because I saw that the NPS score said that they were struggling with something, and I know your agency is good at that. And I said, I've got someone I think is a good fit. They have this problem. I want to bring you on to the sales call Tuesday at 4:30. Are you free? What would you need from me? And what sort of stuff would you want to make sure is there? Not particular to your services, but in general, like what is necessary for you to make sure that that's a good time?
Yeah. So I guess I want obviously the details around the customer or the prospect. And that sounds like obvious, but I've had plenty of invitations to sales calls where they provide nothing. And it's like, well, no, hang on. we need some more here. So any details about the prospect that you can offer, but then really going deep on the problem that they have. Where are they? Where are they hoping to go? Like, what's their desired outcome? Because that's what's going to tell me if I can actually provide the solution, right? Can I bridge that gap between problem and an outcome that they're facing? So I'd want to know that. Just some general details about like how long have they been in the sales cycle, right? Like, what are they debating over other solutions, platforms, things like that, right? Just all of these details. And it could be just a simple email, like quick, hey, this is everything that's going on. I've had a rep send me a video that was just 5 minutes, right? Loom restricted their timing. But I got a 5-minute video that was like a recap of the entire sales process and all the information they could dump in there about the prospect. And it was super helpful. Because I was able to show up to that call very prepared. I think that's what I would ask for.
Yeah, I think this is part of the problem with referrals. And all this account mapping and co-selling software is great. You say, hey, there's this deal that we could potentially introduce you to. But I've been in so many threads, you know, in this multi-threading thing. Yes, there's a time and a place for it. But how many threads have you been in where it's just like, Chris, I want to introduce you to Larry's Gray's this and blah. And I get these introductions and I'd say maybe 20% are an actual potential fit for what we have. And it's just, the person doesn't really know our customer profile. That's partially my fault, but then they didn't even ask me if I would like that intro. I could have told them in 2 seconds, that's not a fit. Don't introduce me. I've had people introduce me to people that I've been introduced to 4 times before they introduced me. It's like, God, another one. Okay. Well, I'm glad. Thank you, I guess. But it's like a referral isn't just a positive thing. It's not just referrals are great. No, referrals can be a problem for your day and they can be embarrassing and they can be just cause issues for the sales.
When it puts everyone in a bad position, right? If it's not a good fit, and you couldn't work that out beforehand, now you got to figure it out live on a call where like you're like, hey, I don't really want to work with you, but I also don't want to make my partner look bad and stuff by calling them, like saying, hey, no, sorry. But it's going to just look terrible on everybody. And so why don't you work that out ahead of time? And so like I've had sales conversations where I get brought in and it's a deal that's not going to close. Like it's obvious. This person is not a good fit. They're struggling to close the deal, but the sales rep really wants to close it. And then they think that bringing in a solutions partner is going to be able to like solve everything. But instead I show up and I'm like, yeah, this probably isn't a great fit for you. Right. And now we like, I'm not going to say that obviously on the call, but like I see that and it becomes super clear for everybody that like, hey, this isn't a great match. Why are we even trying to sell? Let's do right by the customer. Tell them to go find the platform that they need. If we have a recommendation, awesome. But we, yeah, it's just, it's aggravating, right? To like spend time in that conversation knowing nobody's looking good coming out of this.
Sounds so pretentious to be like, I'm not a fan of your referrals, but a lot of people are just really bad at referring. They just
think
any referral is a good referral. And that's not how business works. So the advice there is probably pretty, pretty obvious. It's, okay, well, have a quick Slack channel conversation with your partner with the details. Get a format of what details I need to make sure I can say yes to a referral. Have that conversation with your partner. That could be a part of what we call a partner memorandum where you say, okay, well,
We've checked all the boxes. We're aligned on this. This is their cadence of meetings. These are our points of contact. This is how we're going to communicate. Now, referrals. Let's talk about how you like to be referred. What is the process? And then this memorandum goes out to all your salespeople and your partner team. So everybody knows, this is Chris. This is our new partner. Here's everything we need to know about him. Here's how he likes to have referrals sent. And again, it sounds pretentious just saying that right now. Chris likes referrals in this particular way, but it's for everybody's best interest.
Right.
That's what we got out of that. There was much more there. Let's finish this episode. We'll give you final thoughts here in a minute.
You know, Joe Payne, who was the CEO of Eloqua back in the day and later Alex, they were pushing hard to do their internal services, these smart starts and these other packages. Oh. And I think, which Jill and I didn't know at the time, that this is what the result would happen. But this is the important point, Alex, that when the data came in, Jill was able to demonstrate and stand up for, not only was her win rates much higher, but the deal cycle was much shorter when a partner was involved. The insights that I could give Jill on, you know, I talked to, let's say, John Doe. Hey, John, how's the license going with Jill? When do you think you're going to sign that? You know, it's December 5th. You're going to get that done before the end of the year. They would tell me, what do you think of the pricing? The pricing looks like $120,000 a year. My budget's 95. So between like their license and your implementation, I'm slightly over budget. Is that going to be a problem for you? No, it's just more. So I got to go get this done. I could give all that insight to Jill on what was happening from a cost perspective and vice versa. If I submitted a proposal for services and Jill found out that there was any kind of sticker shocker issue, she could set my expectations so that if they challenged the pricing, I knew whether I should or shouldn't negotiate. So the deal cycles were shorter. The deal sizes were actually larger. You know, Jill's track record probably speaks for itself, but those who don't know her, again, top performing salesperson year after year there. So shorter sales cycles, bigger deals, but most importantly, more successful customers. I mean, I know it doesn't sound too humble when I say that our joint customers were the most successful marketers in the industry. When I put my note of retirement from BDO, the company I sold my company to, the number of posts in there in the comments about the impact that we had on the industry, the impact that we had on their careers, that's really what the value proposition was, is that we weren't just delivering services. We were giving a recipe, an implementation set for this customer. We're a very good insurance policy. Like if you buy this very powerful piece of technology, we're the insurance plan that's going to ensure that they are successful with it. So Eloqua won, the customer won, and we certainly won. And I just always appreciated Jill telling me that if it wasn't the right fit for each other, we were open about that. And you got to have trust in every partnership was based off that.
He was the buyer, meaning like he had done the thing that my buyers wanted to do. He was the SVP of marketing at Ellie Mae that deployed Eloqua and built the recipes for nurture and score and routing and all of that. He had done the thing that my buyer, my potential buyer, had was trying to do. And so Dave, instant credibility, instant experience. Dave came in early. Like Dave was my engineer, right? My sales engineer. Dave was, you know, my demo guy. Dave was, and he was well beyond like the tech. Again, he could tell the story of the marketer and the journey. So Dave was in as early as I could get him in, where he would want to invest his time. And yes, when we went to sign, like I would, the customer would buy my subscription, right? They'd sign my subscription agreement. And they'd sign Dave's, you know, ProServe. Now it might not have been on the same day, but it that was important.
We were never surprised though that she was going to get the license signed and that they would be signing mine. It wasn't like it was potentially going to be with another partner at that stage. We knew, but I did have to kiss, you know, a few frogs to find these wins, and that's a commitment you have to make as a partner. It wasn't like, you know, hey, Jill, give me a full readout on who this prospect is before I decide to go with you. There was lots of times when I would just go there and I'd walk out. Maybe I didn't like the person and want to work with their marketing team, or maybe I didn't believe in the company in terms of what their product or service was, because a lot of early high-tech companies would use the platform. I would just tell Jill, hey, I'm going to gracefully bow out of doing the services, but let me know if you still need me to stay attached to help you win the deal. So I always was committed to Jill because I knew that this is my business partner. And so that if I help her, you know, win, whether it was always a win for demand gen, the ROI from that level of effort would pay off. And then the big deals would happen and the right fits would come. And that, you know, you've got to build an agency where you can, as an entrepreneur, allocate that much time if that's your strategy. I mean, I think since COVID, we're doing so much virtual stuff, but Jill and I did the majority of our stuff face-to-face, doing ride-alongs together and selling that way. So it can be done even doing that way. You're just going to make sure you got an agency of other resources to operate the business if you're going to play a BD role, which I did for many years together.
One of the things that I know we wanted to touch on this for, especially for the partner people on the call, was, look, as a partner leader, you need to know the numbers. You need to know the win rate of deals where partners are involved. You need to know the time to value. And we had dashboards of how many days did it take for the customer's deployment to be complete. And we would look at that based on our internal ProServe and by partner, right? So we would know, you know, at Eloqua Marketo, like, when the partner was onboarded, and we'd measure that by partner. We looked at, you know, NPS. So we surveyed our customers' NPS. We would look at NPS by partner, right? Are happier customers working with specific partners? We looked at customer advocacy. Who are the ones winning awards? And we would look at that by partner. So it's really important for partner people to know the revenue numbers, to know the numbers that the business cares about, and to be able to move those numbers, right? Move the number to improve the win rate when working with partners, to improve, accelerate the deal, the velocity of the deal. You have to be able to prove that, and you need to thread yourself into really the revenue conversation. So, I just want to make it very clear that there's a lot of feel good in what Dave and I did. There's a lot of science too, but there has to be accountability, right? And I think it's so important that there are the salespeople who are willing to say, look, I win more, I win faster, my customers are happier when I work with these partners. That has to happen. And then partners need to be at sales kickoff or revenue kickoff. Partners need to be treated as an extension or part of the team. Partners need to be, like, you need a partner advisory board as you grow as a, but there's so many other things that we really haven't had a chance to cover, but I know we're out of time. So I hope this has been helpful.
All right. That's the episode. So the important thing there in that last bit is David mentioning that his agency is the insurance policy. The insurance there is not just around getting the deal done, but when the deal is done, keeping the customer around, up-tiering them as quickly as possible. Meaning, yeah, a salesperson could push a deal and be incentivized maybe just on units and just push the deal through and get them on a low tier. And then if the partner's not involved, they stay on that low tier and they kind of putter around for a year. But in comes a partner. And Chris, what happens if a partner gets inserted? What are some of the things that you've experienced and ways that a partner can quickly up-tier those customers?
Right. So there's tons of opportunities because you have that understanding of the use case and everything that's possible for, you know, kind of advancing them, right? People are coming with a problem. You want to be able to solve that problem. But really, like, if we're in the business world, we want to be able to keep advancing, right? We're not just trying to stay at a certain, I'm sure there's some company out there, but nobody wants to just hit a revenue level and be like, I'm good, I'm done. Anyone with a team and they're trying to grow their company, they want to keep moving it up. And you're not going to be able to do that with the tech that you have now. Eventually, you're going to have to keep leveling up. And so if you can facilitate that, then they can actually do it. And so, like, one example, I had a lead coming in through HubSpot. I jumped into a sales conversation as a, you know, solutions partner to help the sales rep with the deal. And beforehand, we talked about, you know, their needs, their everything that really that HubSpot believed they needed, but couldn't quite sync like sink it, right? And like just get them to actually believe that. And like one of them was business units, right? They had multiple brands they were working with. And so HubSpot said, you should really be able to separate all of these out within your portal. And so when I came in, that's kind of what I led with the use cases. Hey, we can do all of these things within your account, but at some point you're going to have so much data that's not separated out here. It's going to get confusing. You're not going to be able to have accurate reporting, right? Like all of these different things that are going to become issues. If you use business units now, we can stop that from happening. And we can actually help you install those, set them up right so that your team can use them and you guys are good to go. And so we're able to increase that sale. Like the company was going to buy HubSpot. They just really didn't think business units were the thing, but we were able to now increase that sale value. And we were able to provide the customer with something that actually helps them in the long run. So everybody wins in this scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the insurance policy. I love it.
Right.
So that's a brilliant, analogy, if you will, that David mentioned. So yeah, that was the episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I think we got a lot out of it, a lot around why a partner should be involved. Since this is a how they did it episode, you know, this is really about how Jill honestly saw the opportunity, realized what it meant for the companies that she was involved in, Eloqua and Marketo, to have a power partner, David Lewis, involved. How she navigated the difference, packaged up services that were being pushed internally. And just an all around great episode, Chris. What do you think?
Yeah, cheers.
Love it. Thanks, guys. We'll see you in the next one.